Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salieri Report. This is John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. We're recording on June 1st for publication on Thursday, June 2nd. And central banks are in the news. What's our theme, John?
Will the real Fed please stand up?
Yeah.
We have a trifecta of stories on the Fed where you can see there's trouble in the water.
See, it could be worse. You could wake up tomorrow and be Jerome Powell.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. Talk about a coming clean process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's yeah, but not. There's we'll get to a story where it's like you're blaming what on inflation?
Right.
Mr. Transitory inflation?
So the Fed is talking out of multiple sides of its mouth.
Boy.
And that's just what it's saying. If you look at what it's really doing and its owners and members are really doing under the carpet, I mean, you know, the more transparency you bring and the more people understand what the Fed is up to, the more the lies are going to get caught. So,
yeah, right. The lies are right. Your lie doesn't match your lie. They're different.
I mean, it's times like this that I wish George Carlin was still alive.
Yeah.
Okay, so well, let's just dive in. Let's start with, I think we're starting with war in the Ukraine.
Yeah, war in Ukraine. And there, it's really isn't a story about war in Ukraine per se, but it's a guy talk about Ukraine. And the guy is George W. Bush here. Listen to what he says about what's going on over there.
In contrast, Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq, anyway. 75.
Wow. Is that not unbelievable?
Well, the lies are breaking down. They can't even keep them straight. Right.
Right. Well, he can't remember his own lies. that's a problem. Like, you know, oh, well, you know, it was a completely justified invasion. And there he just has the biggest Freudian slip in the world.
You know, it's interesting because that's the first time I can ever remember him telling the truth.
No. I want you to notice the obsequiousness of the crowd.
Right.
Like, the unjustified invasion. Oh, we just killed a million people. Isn't that funny?
Right.
There was another speech he gave one time where he says, well, in my business, you got to repeat things multiple times, you know, to get it to sink in. He says, you know, you got to catapult the propaganda. And the crowd's
good
like,
God.
Oh, yeah, I got to catapult the propaganda. So he does let it slip. That's an instance of that.
So one of the things you get when you're down in, so I'm assuming the Bush Institute is somewhere in Texas. I've never been there. But when you're down in Texas in the oil patch with people who are big Bush supporters,
yep.
What they all tell you is the Bushes made them all fantastic amounts of money. And if you look at how much money disappeared, you know, into Texas during the S&L crisis or in the missing money or any of these big financial frauds, you know, it's true. A ton of people in Texas made a fortune from the Bushes. And so, you know, their ha 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 is they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Right.
Right.
Because he's an ATM machine for them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. The next story is actually on the Ukraine. This is a follow-up to the story about, you know, the U.S. freezing Russian accounts, you know, over in the U.S. Right. And trying to basically get gas for free. And Russia sidestepped that by saying, no, you need to make payments at the Gazprom bank, you know, here in Russia, and that's how you're going to get your gas. So they got around that. The related story was the U.S. blocking the mechanisms and blocking the paths for Russia to make bond payments, to claim, turn around and claim that Russia's defaulting on the bond payment. So this story is on that. And this story is from Yahoo Finance. Russia readies new bond payment plan in bid to avoid default. And basically what you see here, let me zoom in a little bit. The proposal would allow foreign investors to open accounts in Russian banks in both rubles and hard currency. So it's a sort of the same thing. The proposed structure is a reverse image of the way European nations currently pay for Russian gas. So it's basically a tag along with the last thing we were talking about. But there is some skepticism about whether it'll work. This analyst says, I doubt it will work. For most foreign investors, the procedure for opening an account with a Russian bank may be too difficult, this guy says.
That's just so not true.
In other words, what Russia's saying is, if you want to make your payment, come on, you can make your payment.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And reverse is, we're going to pay you, right? If you want to get paid, there's a way for you to get paid. And I think a lot of people, you know, most bondholders want to get paid. And right. Now they've got a way to get paid.
Right. Now they've got a way to get paid. And the problem with this is, for the U.S., any payment that isn't made pursuant to this is clearly a contrived default. And I think it's going to boomerang. It's a contrived default. It's not a default. No one will view it as a default.
You're tackling a guy on his way to the bank and claiming he defaulted?
Right.
Really?
Right.
It speaks both to the illegality that runs rampant in the U.S. and just the juvenescent, juvenile delinquent mindset of our leaders.
Right.
To pull stunts like that and expect people to believe it.
I don't know when we're going to look at the ruble to dollar currency chart, but the market is voting for the ruble.
Well, why don't we look at the ruble to dollar chart right now? There you go.
There you go. U.S. dollar, you know, the U.S. dollar index spiked all the way to 105 and it back down to 101, but the whole way up since the...
So here was the invasion about right there.
Yeah.
So it's gone. Whoop.
Yeah, well, first the sanctions tanked it. But then, they took the steps they've done to circumvent the sanctions. And now the ruble since has been outtrading the dollar. So the market's not going with the dollar. The market's clearly going with the ruble.
Well, the market is going with the dollar. But the dollar is the number two currency in the world right now.
Right.
The ruble's number one. It's the only currency that's outperforming the dollar.
Right.
But it's trouncing the dollar.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Okay. Let's keep it going on space military and global turf wars. This next story is out of China.
I'm still looking at the ruble.
Yeah, we're going to flip there in a minute.
Okay.
How about now? You're good?
Yeah. Yeah.
So China, dire warning, growth warning in unpublished remarks. China's premier, Li Qiang, or I don't know how to pronounce that. Okay. Warned of dire consequences if officials don't move decisively to prevent the economy from sliding further, saying a contraction in the second quarter must be avoided. Now, this is against the backdrop of there's lockdowns all over the place in Chicago, in China, right? And now the officials saying, hey, you know, we need our GDP to go up. We're going to have dire consequences. And look what happens. His comments to thousands of local officials, he says, China will pay a huge price with a long road to recovery if the economy can't keep expanding at a certain rate. That means growth must be positive in the second quarter. So he comes out and says that, and guess what happens? Lockdowns lifted.
Very good. Yep. So, and of course, our feedback, at least in the lockdowns in Shanghai, is they were driven by politics and economics. They had nothing to do with health. So, you know, who knows what the real truth is, but I suspect that intelligence is correct. The thing that's so important to understand is what we're watching, both in the drop, because we just saw a drop in the U.S. GDP, and China having no growth, is this is a remarkable dial back. You know, a year ago, China's still growing at 6.5%. So they've been, their growth rate has been phenomenal. So for this to dial back is a clear indication of what we can see in the supply shortages and every place else. and that is that the China trade is unwinding. You know, now it's not fully unwinding, but it's clearly diminishing. And what's important to understand, John, is a lot of the prosperity in the West over the last 20 years has depended on the China trade. And if you unwind it, you're talking absolutely about higher inflation, and you're talking about a much diminished prosperity in the West. So
right.
we did an incredible interview with Steve Roche in 2014 on his book Unbalanced, which explains the extraordinary economic dependency, codependency of the two countries, as they're like Siamese twins. And a lot of the false prosperity in the United States over the last 20 years came from China doing the manufacturing and moving all the manufacturing to China, and that's over. So this is a very big change.
Yeah. The kind of what was subtext to that story, and we'll see another one along the same lines, is China does its own thing.
Right.
Right. China does, you know, speaking to local merchants, he's going to do what's good for China.
Right. Right. But China's willing to take short-term pain to do the right strategic thing.
No doubt about that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep it going in space in turf wars, really. This next story is from Australia. This is a disappointment, I must say. Australia ousts Conservatives after 9 years. Albanese to be prime minister. That's the guy's name. Let's just zoom in the key parts. The Labour Party was set to end almost a decade of Conservative rule as the government was swept away in Saturday's election by a wave of support for candidates who campaigned for more action on climate change. The Greens and a group of so-called teal independents who campaigned on policies of gender equality and tackling climate change put on a strong showing, tapping voter anger on the environment after some of the worst floods and fires hit Australia. What do you make of that?
It's total BS. It's just total BS. So it's either Stockholm syndrome or rigged elections. And if you talk to anybody in Australia, they're in a state of shock and amazement.
I mean, following the elections.
Right. It's like waking up and Biden's your president. They can't make sense of it.
Yeah. Right.
Why would you vote for people who just tried to kill you or killed your business? You wouldn't. Right.
Right. Okay. Well, you know what? We need to give them more knives and guns.
Right. It's very interesting. We'll get to it later on. But in one of the articles we're going to talk about this week, you know, Australia allowed gun control. And the difference between what happened in Australia and the United States, I believe, is totally that. We had guns. Yeah. They didn't.
Right.
Right.
The U.S. got a lot of gunners, 300 million guns floating around. Yeah.
And they're buying guns as fast. You know, one thing that has not done poorly for the last 10 years is gun sales.
Yeah, well, Obama being the number one gun salesman in the U.S., U.S. history, really.
Right. You know?
Okay. I'm interested in your take on the next story. I could read this a couple of ways. Taiwan overshadows Quad talks. Japan scrambles jets. So what the heck's going on here? Japan scrambled jets after Russian and Chinese warplanes, interesting, neared its airspace during a visit by U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday, with Tokyo conveying grave concerns about what it saw as a provocative move timed to coincide with the Quad summit. The Quad grouping, so the Quad is here, the U.S., Japan, Australia, and India. That's just one more down here. The patrol took place after President Joe Biden angered China by saying a day earlier he would be willing to use force to defend the democratic island of Taiwan. So they send the planes out after he says that. And then Tuesday, right afterwards, Biden says there was no change to a U.S. policy of strategic ambiguity on Taiwan. So he flip-flops immediately again, like, oh, I misspoke. Yeah. Anyway, what's up with China and Russia getting together like that?
So to me, the big story is you see in the Quad coming together and the Quad meeting, Australia, Japan, Taiwan, they don't, they used to all go through the U.S. So everybody talked to the U.S. and the U.S. ran essentially security for the Asian Pacific area. Now they don't trust the United States to do it. They can't depend on the United States. So now you're seeing them get together as a group. Now, what the what the flybys were, flybys have been going on and sort of excursion into other people's, you know, ocean space has been going on in the South China Sea for years. So I don't think there's anything new other than, you know, you sort of wonder whether the arms manufacturers and the media paid them to do it so they could have a story. So I don't put anything in the flybys, but I do think the fight over the South China Sea, which has been heated up for years, is just going to get tenser, more and more tense. And all the countries out there are trying to figure out, you know, they can't depend on the United States, but they don't want to throw into China. So they're all working to come up with a way of grappling with this together. It's kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Now that you say that, it makes sense to me for the next story too, which is China, Pacific Islands. And we'll look about this in a minute. Pacific Islands. I want to cut to a map of the Pacific Islands real quick, if I can. So the Pacific Islands are out here off of, you know, Australia. And China is up here. Taiwan, that might be cut off. Anyway, that's roughly where things are. Let's cut back to the story.
What's important to understand when you look at that map, John, the percentage of world trade that goes through the South China Sea is unbelievable. I mean, the numbers are phenomenal. Now, and I keep pointing this out, but I'll say it again. The U.S. started to get into the reserve currency business when they got control of the sea lanes in the Caribbean. So if you're China and you're trying to build liquidity around your reserve, around your currency in terms of reserve currency status, you know, you want to control the sea lanes around your borders, and that means the South China Sea. But it's a bottleneck for world trade. So it's going to continue to be hotly contested.
Okay. So on that note of hotly contested, let's look at this story. So with the China and the Pacific Islands. So China's on one side, the islands are on the other, perhaps. China's foreign minister Wang Yi on Monday urged the Pacific region not to be too anxious about his country's aims after a meeting with his counterparts from 10 island nations, deferred consideration of a sweeping trade and security communique from China. Wang hosted the video meeting. A draft communique and five-year action plan was sent by China to the invited nations ahead of the meeting, showed China was seeking a sweeping regional trade and security agreement. The details on that agreement are kind of thin. After the meeting, which included, you know, a lot of these nations, and further, Wang said further discussions were needed to shape more consensus, meaning nobody agreed to anything. They weren't going to go along with that communique. And that's really that. I had trouble sort of reading.
So my question is China trying to make deals to put Navy bases out there?
Yeah, right. Perhaps.
Right.
Anyway, there's not unity there.
Right.
And it's consistent with what you said about people being hesitant to just throw their hat in willy-nilly with China.
Right. Yeah. You know? So you see it when you look at the numbers in Australia or Taiwan, the percent of the GNP, which is actively coming from import exports with China. So China's economic power is growing, growing, growing. If it continues to grow with Taiwan the way, you know, it's growing, nobody has to invade anybody. It'll just be bought. Do you know what I mean? But as that economic power grows, the tension politically grows even more. A couple of years ago, I think in 2010 or 2012, we recommended for Documentary of the Year, a wonderful documentary called Red Obsession, about the Chinese completely overwhelming and taking over the Bordeaux wine market for 2008 and 2010, 2 years almost right in a row. And it's a wonderful movie because you see this tiny market overwhelmed by this huge economic tsunami, and you see all the cultural and economic issues. It's very charming. And Russell Crowe is the moderator, and so it's very much fun. And I love, you know, I used to, when you became a vice president, Dylan Reed, you got a case of Aubryon. So Bordeaux wine, you know, I used to be a bar manager, so I'm very interested in wine and Bordeaux wine. So that was kind of fun. But you see the problem of China, You have 1.3 billion people, and it's an economic powerhouse. And so if you're tiny little islands with a tiny little population, it's easy to be concerned about getting overrun.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You could see in that story that they're all between a rock and a hard place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, shifting gears, the diluting the brand. We have one story this week. It's from the Daily Bell, and it concerns Chile. And Chile bans discrimination against mutants and genetically altered people. This is a law over there. Prohibits labor discrimination against mutations or alterations of genetic material, and in turn prohibits demanding any certificate or test to verify that the worker does not have such alterations or mutations in his human genome. So there's a big question about, not surprisingly, the intent of the bill, whether it's to normalize and legalize genetically engineered human chimeras as human, or to disincentivize employers from snooping into natural humans' genetic makeup. And then they asked this question, is Chile's new law related to COVID-19 mRNA gene therapies? Is that really what's going on here?
Well, I think that's a serious question. We're about to do another symposium for the doctors for COVID ethics. And the number one topic is why mRNA technology should not be permitted. It's dangerous, and it could do unbelievable genetic harm to the human race. So the mRNA technology is a big question. But the other big question is whether it's the COVID-19 injections or lots of other food or drug issues. We have a huge pipeline in agriculture and pharmaceuticals of people trying to get us to ingest secret ingredients. So, yeah. And this has been one of the issues on the COVID-19, on the mRNA technology. There are clearly secret ingredients in these injections,
right.
But it's not just these injections, it's food, it's other things. So you look at this bill and you look at the secret ingredients and you know, deep down in your stomach, you say, this is not good. This is not
no,
good.
No, it's not good.
Right. Well, this is why we need to keep hammering on secret ingredients and asking those questions.
Yeah, because I asked a prominent professor, a prominent guy in a medical school. I said, he drinks the Kool-Aid on all of this. I suspect he's making a lot of money off of this. I said, well, do you have a complete list of ingredients in the vaccine, the COVID-19 vaccines you could send me? And he said, why? Is there some ingredient you're worried about? I said, no, I just want to see a list. Do you have it? He said, well, is there a list? Is there a complete list of the flu vaccine? And I wrote back to him. I said, you mean to tell me there's no complete list of ingredients of either one of these things? And he said, yeah, well, there's no complete list of Obama's grandma's cookie recipe either. And I said, whose organs are cookies being injected into, doctor? And he had no response. But I wonder, I know some of your subscribers and contributors know a lot about this. And I was stunned that it might be the case that it's not just COVID-19. Are there really the other vaccines where we don't know
Absolutely.
The ingredients?
So in 2017, I keep talking about this study, there were two Italian researchers, very, very eminently qualified, who took a group of vaccines and found a whole series of mysterious ingredients, some they could identify, some they couldn't. And not only did they find ingredients that under no circumstances should be in there, including some they couldn't identify, but what they found is the very things that were supposed to be in there to create the, immune reaction weren't there. So the purpose of the injection was missing, and then all this other gunk was in. They
Wow.
published the study. It got huge. It went everywhere virally, and the Italian government, raided their laboratory. I mean, it was a real food fight because they wanted to do everything they could to suppress that story.
Wow, that's unbelievable. The more I learn about this, the more disgusted I am by the medical profession.
Well, after the Japanese came out and said, remember when they shut down the Moderna injection?
Yep.
They said
sure.
They found stainless steel particles. Well, in the meantime, there was a researcher that I was working with who had identified stainless steel particles, and she showed me pictures of them. And it's frightening. Now, they're absolutely tiny, but to look at something that's clearly very sharp in shape that could be aggregating with other steel particles doing, you know, because what you're seeing with the lipid nanoparticles is tearing of the vascular wall. But to think that you've got stainless steel, I mean, why would you put stainless steel particles into somebody's body? I don't
know. So in other words, informed consent boils down to trust me, the doctor, even though I don't know what's in them either.
Right. Exactly.
There is no informed consent.
There is no informed consent, which, as far as I know, is...
There's uninformed faith in people who don't know what they're talking about.
Well, to me, you have to understand, I come from a profession where material omission is a criminal violation.
Yeah.
And it was beaten into us, we could never do this. So what you're watching is the mother of all material omission. Forgive me if I mentioned this before, but Jennifer Walters, who now has just started, she's going to publish this week a great interview with Christopher Exley. But for her first introduction to the Salieri Report, she runs the Health series. She was talking about her training as an RN. She's a nurse. And when she graduated from nursing school, she had her first child who became autistic as a result, or neurologically damaged as a result of a vaccine injury. And she said to me, you know, my number one challenge was getting over my responsibility as a mother to permit this to happen. Because when I was trained as a nurse, I was taught that if I dropped a vial of a vaccine, so if I'm holding a vaccine vial and I drop it, I cannot clean it up unless I put on a biohazardous suit or I get somebody who's wearing a biohazard suit to clean it up. So why would I take something that required a biohazard treatment and inject it into a baby's arm?
Yeah. Right. Something is in that vial.
Right.
Something is in that injection.
Right.
That's not that's not healthy. It's dangerous. It's very, very toxic.
Well, I don't know. Did I ever show you the 2019 WHO meeting in Geneva? This is one of my favorite Dell Bigtree finds. This is like the Augustine Carstens video find, okay? So all the heads of all the vaccine programs came in to have a meeting at the WHO, and Heidi Larson, who's an anthropologist, has been studying, funded by the Gates Foundation, why the whole world population was balking at taking vaccines. And she said they want two things. They want studies, scientific studies, that prove that individual vaccines are safe and effective. And then the head of one of the African countries said, well, no, we also want studies that show that all of these things together, you know, the heavy schedule in one little body, is safe and effective in combination. And then what came out by the gathered people is that no such studies existed. And you watch this on video, and they've admitted it in public on video at the WHO 2019, December. So when did COVID-19 happen?
Yeah, the next month.
Right. There you go.
Yeah. Jeepers. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to FedWatch. And we have a trifecta of stories that give rise to the theme of the week. Will the real feds please stand up? And the first story is from a guy we both really like, Mish. Fed minutes show inflation risks are skewed to the upside. Let's get into it here. He's talking about the minutes of the May 2nd, May 3rd meeting. This is a quote from the meeting, from the minutes. All participants concurred that the U.S. economy was very strong. The labor market was extremely tight and inflation was very high and well above the committee's 2% inflation objective. The Fed is drinking Kool-Aid. A recession is baked into the cake. This is Mish talking right here. He's saying, you know, listen, the U.S. economy being very strong, you're out of your mind. We have some real problems here. And he says, look, just read the minutes. The word risk appeared in the minutes 31 times. Inflation 66. and he identifies a problem here. Sales of agency mortgage-backed securities is a warning to the housing markets that the Fed is willing to sell its MBS portfolio, which would drive mortgage rates higher. And of course, that is poison to rising house prices, is it not?
Well, but to all the people who've collected huge amounts of capital to buy housing, it would be good news, you know.
Yep. It's a lower good for them,
price, a lower price for a lot of people is good news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lower house, right, is good news for a lot of people. It's bad news for a lot of people, too.
So what I find to be most impressive about this story is all the different reasons they came up to explain how inflation has happened, other than the important one.
Right. And this after months and months and months, if not a year of, oh, it's transitory. Don't worry about it. It's transitory. Trust us. We're the experts. Oh, it's not transitory.
Right.
But so we were wrong about transitory, but we're right now about what the causes are.
Right.
Are you kidding? Anyway, let's keep it going. The next story, the Financial Times. Central banks launched most widespread rate rises over in the last two decades, basically. Policymakers around the world have announced more than 60 increases in current key interest rates just in the past 3 months.
Right.
According to an analysis by the Financial Times, the sudden shift in policy comes as inflation has reached multi-decade highs in many countries, fueled by soaring energy and food costs since Russia invaded Ukraine.
Russia did it. It's all their fault.
Here we go. Fueled by soaring energy and food costs. So the costs, but look at this. Here's the graph of cuts or the increases
rises.
In the rates.
Yeah.
It's a big change. And I think that may be all. Nope. Here is what we wanted to talk about. This is China and Russia bucking the trend. Look who's bucking the trend here. One major economy bucking the trend is China, where mounting economic damage from widespread virus restrictions and troubles in the property sector prompted officials to cut the one-year loan. It wasn't a big cut, but it was clearly contrarian.
Right.
Also, Bank of Japan has said no, we're keeping it zero. But the big monster, the big contrarian is Bank of Russia, which aggressively raised rates last year and at the start of its invasion of Ukraine, has cut them three times in recent months.
Right. And
so it's Russia, you know, remember, this is against the backdrop of the ruble rising.
Right.
You know, Russia's just doing exact opposite of what the U.S. does, and it's beating the U.S. in its own game.
So you can see the Times probably got some feedback on this story because they had a new one today on the gap in cost of capital. So Japan is at 0%. Russia's cutting down from 20%. That's a huge gap. It's not unlike the fact that the average American consumer, as of a year ago, was paying 17%. The New York Fed member banks were paying essentially 0% or 0.5%. So I think Brazil was at 12%. So they're talking about the extraordinary gaps in cost of capital between the different societies. ECB says they're going to move out of negative yields as of September. We'll see. But you're looking at, and this is part of the commodity producers pushing back because they're tired of taking currencies from people whose printing allows them a 1% cost of capital while their cost of capital is 20%. And meantime, they're swapping, you know, real oil for useless paper. So, this arbitrage has got to get closed. And the question is, will it get closed economically or with war?
Yeah, I mean, well,
right now it looks like war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trade. Yeah, war is what happens when there's no trade.
Right.
And trade is what happens when there's no war. Okay, let's go to the third story in our trifecta. The U.S. Fed says its goal is to get wages down. Here we come to, what the Fed says is the causes of the inflation, which it denied was permanent for basically a year. And now it says, okay, well, it's a real problem, but here's the reason. Trust us on the reason. Here's the reason they give for what's going on. In a press conference on May 4th, Powell announced that the Fed would be raising interest rates. Should we know? According to the transcripts of the presser published by the Wall Street Journal, Powell blamed this inflation crisis on U.S. workers supposedly making too much money. Employers are having difficulty filling job openings, and wages are rising at the fastest pace in many years, Powell complained. The Federal Reserve Chairman did concede that these wages are to some extent being eaten up by inflation. In other words, he's saying, yeah, it's inflation, the wages, rising wages are the problem behind inflation. But then he turns around and concedes that it's a lagging indicator. It's the inflation of wages is below the inflation in other things. It's ridiculous.
So one of the ways that we had unbelievably aggressive monetary policies for many, many years was it was offset by the deflating labor values, which absolutely decimated income and living standards in the middle class in the West. So if you watch my favorite video with Sir James Goldsmith explaining why globalization will decimate the middle class, you know, that was a plan. And if you look at you know, wage increases, capital, you know, return to capital is skyrocketing and labor is just flatlined. So all the wealth increase is going to the guys who rent the capital. It's not going, you know, nothing's going to labor.
Right. And, it's going to the people who are dumping, they're just dump their bonds and their garbage onto the Fed's balance sheet.
Right. And so, and it's a rigged deal. So you have the world being run by the richly subsidized while the people who are providing the subsidy are absolutely getting squeezed. So now we come into a situation where labor finally has a chance to start catching up. And I would like to point out, if you study the Skidmore survey, I would argue that one of the reasons people are having problem filling positions and people have to raise wages is so many people have been poisoned, including by the injections.
Boy, you said a mouthful there. Yeah.
Right, right. So we saw the, I don't know if the announcement came after the last Fed meeting, but we saw in the first quarter, productivity dropped 7.5%. You know, that's a labor force that is being destroyed by a variety of different things. That's not a successful, happy labor force. So if you look at the U.S. leadership, they have absolutely engineered the current situation. And, you know, I would argue that inflation comes from printing money, giving it to your friends, and then destroying a million small businesses, decimating the and poisoning the population. You know, and here's where you are. Your friends now have a ton of money and you're going to engineer a recession so they can buy cheap. That's what it looks like to me.
I want to just, in the interest of completeness in the last story, cut back to it real quick, because Michael Hudson says inflation is, I'm not sure I agree with this, is caused by corporate monopolies, not labor. That's his take on it. I don't agree with that. I think it's exactly what you just said. You just added, you just injected a huge amount of money, new money into the money supply, and you dumped it.
Well,
on a
if
bunch
you
of,
if you include the corporate monopolies of the owners of the Federal Reserve, I would I would say that it works for me.
That, right, but that's not the connotation of corporate monopolies.
Right, right,
right.
Okay, but you know, you and I know the big 800-pound gorilla corporate monopoly is the owners of the Federal Reserve.
You got it, you got it.
Right.
Yeah. So let's be real clear on that. Okay.
I mean, the New York Fed is a corporation, right?
It is.
It is.
It says in a publication called I Bet You Thought from 1977, no, we're not part of the government. We're a private company.
Right.
Yeah. Like, wow. And we're owned by banks, which are also private.
Right.
Okay. No confusion there. Okay. Let's keep it going. And Fed Watch, this next story, I love this next story, because it validates something we've been saying for weeks here. Yellen. You can't just do whatever you want. Anyway, but watch this spin here. It's just absurd. Watch this. Yellen, it's not legal for U.S. government to seize Russian bank central assets. Well, do tell. That's what we've been saying. But here you get into it, and it's like U.S. Treasury Secretary Yellen said on Wednesday that it would not be legal for the United States to seize frozen Russian central bank assets to help rebuild Ukraine after Russian invasion ends. Yellen told reporters ahead of a G7 meeting that the United States and its allies have blocked have blocked an estimated $300 billion of assets from Russia's central bank. And blocking is okay, evidently, right? She says, she just says, it would not be legal. I love this too. It would not be legal now in the United States for the government to seize those assets. It's not something legally permissible in the United States. So what are we doing about that illegality? Well, instead of seizing the assets, we're just going to block them.
So we're going to freeze them. But if you look at what they were proposing in terms of creating an international seizure capability, my deepest fear here is they are working with Congress to set up a global seizure network that will allow them to seize this.
Yeah, I want you to notice a couple of things about that story. Okay. Uh-huh. Number one, there's no effort whatsoever to explain why blocking assets is okay, but seizing assets is illegal. Then number two,
well, they're not just blocking them, they're freezing them. So they're not just blocking the transmit, but they're freezing them, and they're freezing them in a way that the assets are going down while they're freezing them.
They're doing something to make sure they don't move.
Right. So I'll give you a perfect example. The Department of Justice seized our assets, put them in a under court order, gave our main competitor access to them on the theory that they were helping to manage them for the government. And by the time we got them out, it took me 6 years to get them out of court control. I could no longer use them because they were legacy software and they'd stolen the most valuable pieces. So they would say they hadn't seized them. They just froze them for 6 years.
But let's be clear about what we're talking about here. Remember, it was Russian reserves at issue, right? And Russian reserves, it's a foreign country. So it holds its reserves in the U.S. in the form of bank accounts.
Right.
Okay. Those bank accounts are liabilities on the bank's balance sheet.
Right.
So when they talk about seizing the assets, they're not really taking the money. What they're doing is they're deleting liabilities, which would then rear its head on an increase in the capital or the equity of the bank.
Right.
Okay. That's how that works. So query what the difference is if you're just not going to let somebody use their liabilities. That's a distinction without a difference. The second thing I want to point out about that story is that there was no mention whatsoever of any due process with respect to either seizing or freezing assets. No due process at all. Just snap our fingers and do whatever we want.
Right.
And that's the problem.
What I will tell you is this means Yellen and the banks can control where those assets are, how they're treated and where they're sloshing around. But the Department of Justice and Congress can't get their hands on the money, let alone spend it.
Right. That's purely a matter for the Fed, because ultimately that's going to boil down to reserves, not the bank money. The bank money just stays inside the bank. It either gets created or deleted within that bank. It's really the reserves that are moving around. The Fed is behind this. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah. Right. Of course. Of course. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay.
But we believe in the rule of law because we're not seizing, right?
Yeah, I know. Right. We're just freezing for a little while. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Anyway, this next story you sent, I was like, what is this? You got to explain this one. This is crazy. Kansas Reflector. Okay. This is the publication. Kansas lands deal for construction of $650 million, 500 job biomanufacturing facility. I love this. I love the language in this too. Heat Biologics founder Jeff Wolf considers construction of a $650 million, 500 employee commercial vaccine production plant in Manhattan. That is, to be clear, Manhattan, Kansas, not New York, focused on quick reaction to natural or man-made biological threats to be a U.S. national security imperative. So this huge thing is done in association with the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility and the U.S. Army at Fort Riley. And he says, okay, so they're talking about making bioweapons, basically, right?
Right.
But it's pitched as this: the COVID pandemic and recent geopolitical events highlight the urgent need for rapid response to potential biological threats to protect Americans from deadly disease. What a bunch, that's total nonsense. That's not what that facility is about. Am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, so you need to read the name of the facility. Go up to the top.
Oh, I love this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go. Let me zoom in. The facility, yeah. They're not really trying to be subtle here. Scorpion Biological Services Facility. Just in case you were wondering whether they're making weapons, they name it Scorpion. But rest assured, it's defensive because we need to protect ourselves from viruses like the pandemic, like COVID-19. So we've got scorpion hair to help us.
You know, it really helps to understand that Kennedy's book is published and made clear what's going on. We see the Russians give a detailed presentation to the UN and the National Security Council on the 30 biological warfare labs in the Ukraine and what they were up to with documentation. And yet, you know, this biowarfare empire continues to grow and prosper. There's plenty of money for biowarfare.
Right. There's a bottomless pit. $650 million just in Kansas, right?
Right.
Which one city in Kansas? That's it.
Yeah, what collapse? There's no collapse. There's a boomtown.
Right. It's crazy. Right. Okay, let's keep it going. This next story is interesting. I can't wait to hear your take on this. Top U.S. antitrust enforcer pledges crackdown on private equity deals. Oh, do tell. The top antitrust enforcer in the U.S. has warned that the DOJ will take a tougher stance on private equity firms rolling up swaths of the American economy as it targets buyout groups that have largely skirted the watchdog's scrutiny. Well, how very curious. Do you mean to tell me the watchdog has been sitting on its hands and not watching?
So essentially for 30 years, if you went to the antitrust department at the Department of Justice, there was a sign on it that said out to lunch, you know, for 30 years. And so it's almost as though somebody called and said, make a headline. We need to look like we're, you know, this used to happen in Washington. The secretary would call us in and say, we just got a headline of this. We need to make it look like we're doing something. Okay.
Yeah,
so this headline makes it look like they're doing something. And if you think they're going to go after private equity guys in election year, it tells me they're just trying to raise money from the private equity guys. It's like a shakedown. Right. That's what it looks like.
That's exactly what it looks like. Let's go back to it. The decision to target the sector comes as buyout firms such as Blackstone, KKR, and Apollo have grown to become diversified conglomerates, controlling vast chunks of the U.S. economy, ranging from retail chains to hospitals and data centers and in neighborhoods. They left that one out, too. What they're worried about here, the agency, they're going to focus on interlocking directorates. That's where a buyout group sits on the boards of multiple competing companies. I love this, too. Doing that, if she's, you know, sitting on all those different boards, could violate a section of the 1914 Clayton Antitrust Act, Cantor said. He says, we're going to enforce that.
Really?
Like we're not enforcing it now, but we're gonna enforce it. Just the whole thing's. But he never says. There's no specific plan. It's all like, well, he doesn't point to anything they've done already.
So there is a little truth here that's worth knowing, and that is, one of the reasons that the equity markets have lost some of their power is the private equity guys are absolutely skimming off the top. They're creaming the market.
Yeah.
And they're reducing the float. I think it's one of the reasons they might have done the SPACs to get the float back up. But they're creaming the market and they're using illegal tactics and disaster capitalism to do it. And they're using pension funds to do it. So the cream that they're offering pension funds with our retirement savings, you know, through their vehicle is hurting the publicly traded returns of the same pension funds. And so, you know, I really think real pension fund leadership would say, you know, this creaming game by organized crime and the private equity firms is not, you know, this is not okay because we're watching the liquidation and destruction of a country for these guys to sort of liquidate and harvest. So there's a real issue here, but clearly, you know, if you read this, it's not going to be addressed.
Right. The DOJ, anything by the DOJ, was captured a long time ago. You know, it was before, shortly before the Obama, you know, came into office. They haven't done anything in the way of law enforcement, and they're not going to start now, I guarantee you that.
Right, but here's the question. Will this article help with fundraising?
Yes. No doubt about that at all. Yep. Right. Sure. Okay, next story. This is a video from Tucker Carlson on the new war on terror, and what he's talking about here is the domestic terrorism bill. And I'm not going to play the video. But it is good. He goes through, it's basically what it says here. We have just moved one step closer to tyranny. And in my opinion, it's a good video. It's a bit long, but I think he's exactly right about that with that tyranny.
So here's the thing. Tucker Carlson has done a great job trying to stop the WHO and trying to stop the domestic terrorism bill. So we have two major moves by tyranny over the last month. And he has been, you know, it's phenomenal because Fox is letting him do it. But he's been in the lead on saying, no, no, no. And interestingly enough, if you look at the intervention of the Senate on the domestic terrorism bill, and if you look at what's happened on the WHO, I think it, you know, his efforts here were consequential.
Yeah, particularly on the WHO and the
right
13 proposed amendments to the international health regulations, 12 of which got shot down recently.
Right. And more importantly, on the 13th, it didn't get shot down. The timeline, instead of done in 6 months, it's done in 12 months, which means you can't use it to rig the election.
Right.
Right.
Very, very key point there. Very right. Good point there. Yep. Right. Okay. Let's keep it going on FedWatch. The next story is very interesting, given its source and what it says. This is the concerns of Uvalde, you know, school shooting. It's from the Wall Street Journal. And it says, police made wrong decision in waiting to storm shooter, says Texas official. We're talking about the Texas Department of Public Safety, and the director's name is Stephen McGraw. Keep that in mind. What is interesting about this story is right here. Friday's press conference followed days of mounting anger among local residents about the time it took to end the massacre and shifting details from officials about the timeline of events at Tuesday's mass shooting. So the journal is casting doubt on it, just shifting details. What are they talking about? A school security officer was offsite at 11:28 a.m., when the gunman, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, crashed a truck into the ditch outside Robb Elementary School and began shooting at people outside a funeral home across the street, according to McGraw. The officer arrived soon after hearing about the incident. Interesting, they did say he hears it, if he hears about it, but mistakenly thought a different person was the gunman and bypassed Ramos, who was then in the school parking lot, firing intermittently, McGraw said. Previously, officials said the security officer had confronted Ramos. That story doesn't make a lick of sense, and the journal knows it.
Right.
And the journal is a big publication, usually endorses the official public line. Here's just absurd.
Except for one thing. The Senate, and we'll talk about it in a second, the House would not pass the domestic terrorism bill. So you have the Buffalo shooting. House passes almost immediately.
Right.
The Senate won't pass. So then they have the Texas shooting, which is the one we're describing here.
Right.
And then the Senate still balks. And my guess is the Wall Street Journal had several stories. That was all part of the Senate balking. There was an effort to say, no, 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 you're not going to steamroll this. It won't happen. So I think because it's very unusual for the journal to do this, it clearly looks, I have not investigated it. And this is one of those situations where if you go down the rabbit hole, it could take 100 hours. It clearly looks like they were under orders to stand down and they did. And as a result, 19 kids died. This is a very ugly story.
You know, Merrill Nass has a posting on this, a blog on this, school shootings. I am sorry, but this needs to be said. And she talks about the timeline. She's saying, look, school shootings are the most provocative and effective way to initiate a change in gun laws. And then she says, you know, a reader sent me this piece by David Swanson revealing that at least a third of mass U.S. shooters have been trained in the U.S. military. Were they put through mind control programs while serving the country? And then down here we come to the timeline that you're talking about.
And you sent this to me. I think it was you sent it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Here's the bill, okay, the domestic terrorism, the same thing that Tucker Carlson was talking about, and this walks through the timeline. And you can see that the bill, you know, gets hung up for a while. You know, it's introduced in the House on the 19th of January, and it gets hung up for basically 4 months. And then you get the Buffalo shooting, and what happens? It's passed in the House. And then you have Uvalde shooting, and what happens? It's brought to a vote in the Senate. Bang, 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 bang. So in the space of 12 days, everything gets done, and during which time the school shootings take place.
Right. So they're trying to get it through the Senate, but it wouldn't go because the Republicans have held firm on gun control, and they continue. Yep. But what I thought was remarkable about Merrill's article is basically, you know, what she's saying is it's time to talk openly about the fact that normal people don't do this. You know, people who've been engineered by the CIA and the intelligence agencies to do this, and, you know, and private, it's not just public intelligence agencies, it's private intelligence agencies too. These are covert operations. These are not natural events. They're covert operations. They're engineered. Right. They're staged. They're financed. This is a plan, you know, and it's time to start talking about this. Because if you want to stop school shooting, don't pull in the guns from the honest people. What we need to do is take the guns away from the dishonest people. You know, and I would say that includes the intelligence agencies. So, you know, it's an op.
Yeah, that was clear to me. The first time I went down a 100-hour rabbit hole was Sandy Hook.
Really?
I was like, oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
The stories were just ridiculous. You know,
right.
None of them shook out. Anyway. The last story in FedWatch, I'll let you tee off on this. This is the World Economic Forum panel on a reimagined global tax system. I'm not going to play this video because it's long. It's sped up. Foreign accent. Can't understand a word she says. Oxfam Executive Director Gabriela Boucher calls for a global 25% corporate tax rate and complains that countries are lowering tax rates to be competitive. What do you make of all this?
So there is an issue where corporations compete countries and countries compete with each other. And, you know, to the extent that you can create a global monopoly that can't be competed, you know, the centralizers can harvest even more. But one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up is at the very heart of the global coup that's underway is the critical issue is how's taxation going to work? This is one of the most important cash flows to how the system works. And it's not just, you know, we just sent the taxation wrap up to everyone. And, you know, issue number one is in a system that's centralized, how are you going to have a rational taxation policy? But then how are you going to get people, how are you going to force them to pay taxes when they have no representation, when they're used to feeling and thinking that they have a representation? Particularly if you're going to do what you're doing to the middle class now, which is drive them into poverty. So people don't like paying taxes to a system that uses the money to kill them and poison their children. They don't like that. So, and that's the taxation issue is rising to the surface. And my prediction is it's going to get more and more and more important over the next year or two. And that's one of the reasons we did this wrap up, because it's got to be dealt with. And there are ways of using it to make us more powerful and return us to sovereignty. So start thinking about taxes. And if you, you know, the PDF is up on the website. Anybody can read it if you're a digital subscriber. But if you're a print subscriber, if you haven't gotten the copy in the mail, you get it pretty soon. So start thinking about taxation, because this is where the rubber's going to meet the road. And this is only going to get big over the next 2 years.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's exactly right. We're going to shift gears. There's really no CBDC or crypto stories this week. However, we do have a crypto chart. This is Bitcoin 5-year chart. What do you see here, Catherine?
So it's really funny because, you know, Bitcoin peaked at, I think, 68,000 in November. And it's been halved since then. And I got an email from a wonderful ally about a week or two ago saying, you know, because I'd done a big interview late last year on Bitcoin with Mercola for about 3 hours. So they wrote me and they said, you're right about Bitcoin. And he said, the word on the street is it's going to zero. And I wrote back and said, no, I don't think so. If I were these guys and I was fighting inflation, I'd pump it some more. And that email came in right at that bottom, that recent bottom. And sure enough, it's turning up. It's up about 2,000 from the floor. So.
Yeah.
You know, I think the chances are good we're in for, you know, the next pump, but we'll see.
Because Very interesting.
when you see growth slow down this much, you know, the air comes out of the balloon everywhere, you know, whether it's crypto, the stock market, bonds, everything.
So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It's not, there's too much utility left in Bitcoin to push it to zero.
That's what I think. I mean, a day will come when they might want to push it to zero, but it's not here yet. So, you could see the blood was really in the water. And if you bought or traded at 68,000, so I'm just going to say it again. I keep saying I'm going to say it again like a broken record. If you have swaps at 68,000, please make sure if you do swaps or a taxable trade, please escrow the money in the currency you have to pay taxes in. Because as soon as they do a dump like this, they send in the auditors.
Wow.
You know, I used to have a guy when I worked at HUD who said an auditor is a person who bayonets the wound, you know, so they know how the enemy walks through the battlefield when it's over, bayoneting and, you know, making sure everybody's dead. So the auditors are coming in. So get ready.
Wow. Wow. That's scary. Good advice. Okay. Right. Let's shift gears to an unpleasant topic, Farmageddon. No surprise here. CDC recommends COVID booster shot for children ages 5 to 11. The CDC recommended Thursday that children 5 to 11 get a third dose of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine to boost their immunity as cases and hospitalizations tick upward in many pockets of the United States. Walensky also announced that the CDC was strengthening the recommendation that people 50 and older should get a second booster dose, a fourth shot in most cases, to be considered up to date on their coronavirus vaccinations. And she cites here cases increasing. That's why you need to do all this. It's the cases are increasing so fast. So go get yourself a little booster.
We've proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that these vaccines are not effective and they're not safe.
Right.
And we know in children they have zero chance of death.
Yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't protect them from anything. The injection is far riskier for them than, whatever COVID-19 might be. So there's no reason to give children the injection. So the question gets back to secret ingredients. What are the secret ingredients and why is it so important they inject them into our bodies?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
That's the question.
What's the deal?
Well, but here's the other thing. The CDC is clearly acting completely outside of science and completely outside of the law.
Totally.
Right. And they feel no compunction. It's interesting. Naomi Wolf has had a project where 1,000 doctors and attorneys and healthcare experts.
We'll get to that.
Oh, sorry. I forgot we had it. Okay. So that story makes this even more shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting one. But let's go to a story by Whitney Webb real quick. Monkeypox fears may rescue endangered corporations. I'm going to kind of take this in reverse order here. The guy we want to keep our eye on here is corporate raider Ron Perlman. Has deep and controversial ties to the Clinton family and the Democratic Party, as well as ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Aside from his controlling stake in SIGA, which is a company, Perlman has recently made headlines for rapidly liquidating many of his assets in a desperate bid for cash. So he's in trouble. SIGA has coincided with a recent, its value, essentially no attention has been paid given the fact that the company is apparently the only piece of the powerful billionaire's empire that isn't currently crumbling. So Perlman is front and center in the story. He's got one asset here at SIGA Technologies that's doing pretty well. Why is it doing well? Well, it's
Monkey
one of two
companies.
Yep. Emergent Biosolutions, which is another company, and SIGA. Both companies essentially have monopolies in the U.S. market and other markets as well on smallpox vaccines and treatments. Their main smallpox-focused products are, conveniently, also used to protect against or treat monkeypox. Ta-da! As a result, shares of Emergent Biosolutions climbed 12% on Thursday, while those of SIGA soared 17%. So Perlman, the day has been saved for the Democratic donor. How about that?
So apparently monkeypox has just been eating up the airwaves. There's a great presentation that Palmer has prepared for the part of it will be up on the website published, but then he'll give a presentation on monkeypox. And when you, at the symposium on June 11th, when you listen to the truth of this thing, it's just, you roll your eyes. So far, according to 2 days ago, the headline I saw, there have been zero deaths.
Yeah, right.
But it's a global media phenomenon.
Right. We got to, it's an emergency, right? Just right. Like COVID. Like we know it's coming, it's coming. Oh, yeah, 8 people have died. Okay, we got a lockdown.
Right, right.
You know.
Well, it looks like they're trying to do something, but I think just there's too much laughter to get away with it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, right.
But
people, they need a paper bag over their head with these stories more and more. Right. Okay, next story. This is from Meryl Nass. How common is myocarditis after a smallpox vaccination? She says, interestingly, in 2015, U.S. military physicians described a study of 1,081 healthy young soldiers who received a smallpox vaccine as part of their military service. 5 of those soldiers developed a clinical case of myo or pericarditis, but an additional 31 vaccine recipients had elevated cardiac enzymes. And she's like, these are way out of line. You know, she says here, this is over just the 5 soldiers is over 200 times the expected rate, the rate of. So, you know, what's going on with that, the smallpox vaccine? And she quotes this abstract from the study. Look, listen to this. New onset chest pain, dyspnea, and or palpitations occurred in 10.6% of smallpox vaccinees. That is unbelievable.
Well, here's the thing. If you combine the heavy schedule of vaccinations for children with the COVID-19 injection and boosters and then a smallpox vaccine, you are talking about poisoning the population. And that is related to the productivity failure and what's going on in the economy. When you poison your population and you poison your labor force, and remember the insurance executive who said deaths were up 40%?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
they were an insurance company that provided policies to people through payroll. So we're talking about the labor force. Their deaths are up 40%. So when you poison your general population and your labor force, this is what happens.
Yeah.
And we're talking, I mean, Kennedy's book, and this is an old statistic, over 50% of the children in America have chronic disease.
Wow.
That's the end.
Wow. I believe it.
When we had Dr. Perrone on the Soleri report, she said, look, the number's not 50, 51%. It's really 70% because a lot of kids can't afford to get properly tested, so they don't get properly diagnosed. But this is an absolute epidemic.
You know, I believe it about the poisoning. I was at a party on Sunday before Memorial Day, and I looked around, and there were 15 people there, and I realized I was one of the only people without a limp.
Right.
Just hobbling around everyone and all, you know, on board with the vaccines.
When I first got to Tennessee, the local grocery store, when you walked in, everybody walked normally. By 2015, if you walked in, most people shuffled. They didn't raise their feet off the floor.
Yeah.
Right.
Very common to see that now.
Right.
Yeah. But don't believe your lying eyes. It's safe and effective. Don't you know it? All right. Well, on that note, let's go to Dr. Naomi Wolf, see what she has to say about this. This is great. Her blog is Outspoken with Dr. Naomi Wolf. Dear friends, sorry to announce a genocide. She says, I've been rendered almost speechless because recently I had the unenviable task of trying to announce to the world that indeed a genocide, which is a baby die-off, is underway. And she talks about this war room here, this daily, which is people, it's a group of 3,000 highly credentialed doctors, registered nurses, biostatisticians, medical fraud investigators, and other scientists have been turning out report after report, as you may know, to tell the world what is in the 55,000 internal Pfizer documents, which the FDA had asked a court to keep under wraps for 75 years. And what they found, among other things, is in internal trials, there were over 42,000 adverse events and more than 1,200 people died.
Right.
4 of the people who died, they died on the day they were injected.
Right.
And Wolf just goes on and on and on and on with this. This is really worth reading. But it's clear that Pfizer knew how harmful the
COVID-19
vaccine is. Very
absolutely
clear.
So what's remarkable is that Wolf has been part of gathering, you know, so many volunteers who are willing to go through this tsunami of documentation. And a lot of the way, you know, you've pointed out many times that Pfizer is a serial criminal. And the way they hide is behind the complexity. First, they ask the court to let them keep the documents secret for 75 years, because that's how long it takes for everybody to die, right?
Right.
So nobody wants any criminal liability, so they wait until, you know, everybody's dead. When the judge forced
let me just interject here. The statute, there is no statute of limitations on murder.
Right.
Okay. So the only way to avoid a murder prosecution, if you've murdered somebody, is you die. Right. That's what the 75 years is about.
Exactly.
To be very clear.
Right. And murder includes genocide.
So, indeed it does.
So what they've done then is they release a tsunami, a tsunami, 55,000 plus documents. And so they just bury the information, because you need highly expert people to read it, understand it, communicate it. And so we've watched so many volunteers come together, you know, 1,000 plus people with the credentials, the experience, and the technical skills to read it, understand it, and communicate it. And that's what Wolf is basically part of the leadership and is, you know, overwhelmed by what they're telling her.
Yeah. She's blown away by it.
It's pretty frightening.
Yeah. Yeah, they knew. Anyway, that's a grave.
Right. But hold that thought.
It's how dangerous it is, too.
So all of this is coming out. The documents are out there public. But the CDC is approving a booster for 5 to 11-year-olds when they have no risk of dying from COVID. How can that be?
Right.
I mean, that's the CDC that's saying, we know this kills people. We know it's not effective. We know it's not safe. But we're going to encourage you to take it anyway. And the question is why?
The question
is
why?
What is their goal, and what are the secret ingredients?
Right. Yep. Okay. Let's turn to happier topics, which is pushback. And we'll start with Catherine's letter to her state and federal representatives. I love these, by the way. Withdraw from the WHO. I'll just click on one letter to Senator Blackburn, and you could see your letter here, which is very well done, by the way. Like these a lot. We want to talk about these?
Well, what happened was I was asked if I would come to Geneva to do the press conference. And I'm a great believer that you have to walk your talk. You can't say we're going to stop the WHO and we need to contact our representatives. I can't say that unless I've already done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one of the advantages of working in Washington is letters count. If you write a personalized letter from a constituent, it really, really counts. I'll never forget when I've been in Washington for a couple months, and I got a call from a congressman's staff, could you come over and talk to us about housing? We're getting a flood of letters. So I get over there. I said, how many letters have you gotten? She said, 3 on housing. We can't believe it. You know, and this was enough to get them up. Well, the one thing you learn, there are 2 things I've learned in life. If you're in the restaurant business, you have to clean the bathrooms. If you work in Washington, you have to answer your mail. Okay? It's unbelievable how important answering your mail was. Anyway, so letters count, calls count, they care. It makes a huge difference. So I said, okay, well, I've got to write a letter. So actually, you know, I cannot tell a lie. I got to help some help with it, because I was busy trying to get ready for the press conference anyway. But, you know, we had a strategy meeting. I wrote out exactly what I wanted to say, and I had a writer helping me write it, and I got them done. And then I put them up so everybody could take these and adapt them for themselves. So it makes it easier for the next guy to write the letter. And sometimes subscribers will write letters and send them in, and I'll post them so people can see, you know, they post them at subscriber input. But this is one where you cannot let this happen, because every human right we enjoy, from property rights to the right to travel, the right to speak our mind, all those rights can be taken by this process. I mean, one of the reasons I voted for Trump is he said he'd get us out of the WHO, and he did. So
yeah, he did. Yeah, he made good on that one.
He made good on it. So we got to get out of the WHO, and we got to stop financing the WHO. We cannot finance people who use the money to kill us. You know, that just can't work.
Right.
Right.
That's not a viable model, obviously. That note of the WHO and sovereignty, I want to cut to the next story. This is a great story from Tennessee Stands. I'm not familiar with that. You probably are. How Tennessee should prepare for an unconstitutional treaty usurping national sovereignty by the WHO. And I just want to point out, you'll hear that term, you know, it's usurping sovereignty, the WHO.
Right.
This story puts out the litmus test for what's going on, how you know
right.
that it's a usurpation of sovereignty. Let's cut back to the story. I want to just roll down to the highlight here. Can I get that in?
Yep. Yeah.
Nope. The proposed amendments. This is, he's quoting from, here is what Liberty Council founder and chairman Matt Staver had to say on this topic. This is key. This is so important. The proposed amendment would give the WHO global jurisdiction over the United States, including the authority to declare national emergencies. And this is the key. We have already seen the lawless abuse of power under Joe Biden by the Centers for Disease Control, which the courts have fortunately blocked. In other words, the courts blocked this. Americans would have very little recourse against the WHO. So
right.
In other words, the WHO is being used as an unrun around the courts. The courts have blocked a lot of this unconstitutional stuff, and the WHO is sidestepping that, and that is a very excellent point.
Right. And it's also, you know, that also has implications for the November election, because, you know, if there's a real election, then the Democrats are going to lose big, is where we're coming out. So
yep.
This could solve their election problem. It could get the courts essentially overturned. But we've seen an effort for many, many years to try and engineer a constitutional convention so they can tear the Constitution apart. You know, make no mistake about it, when they're through with a constitutional convention, animal rights will have more rights than human. And we'll have genetically mutants. And, you know, it's just going to be unbelievable what gets engineered in. So there's been a trench warfare to stop a constitutional convention and constitutional amendments. And a lot of that was stopped. And a lot of the big issues were Second Amendment. It was the gun control. And the guys who've been trying to get that constitutional amendment or constitutional convention or get rid of the Second Amendment, this is their, you know, they're stalled in all those. This is their new way in. But make no mistake about it, we've got to stop them on all of these things. It's not just on WHO.
Right.
We've got to stop them on the Constitutional Convention. We've got to stop them in the courts. You know, this is, you know, I hate to say this, this is a war, and they're going to fight to the death. So we have to, too.
Yeah, big time.
Right.
And it's not just about the WHO. Let's cut to the next, pushback story from Catherine Austin Fitz. This is the end of Western liberty. What are we talking about here?
So on the way to Geneva, there's a wonderful member of the new media here in the Netherlands called Black Box TV. And it's run by a wonderful broadcaster who used to cover sports. He was a cyclist and he covered the cycling sport. And when COVID hit, he just said, you know, I got to get serious. Anyway, so Black Box agreed to stream it, and we got a lot of attention through the stream. Anyway, I stopped at Black Box and gave them a quick interview, and that's up at Soleria in the News if you want to watch it. So it's the whole thing in a 3-minute clip. So if you want to know the 411 on WHO and what they were up to and why it's so important to stop it, just check that out at Soleria in the News.
Yeah, okay. And there's a link in the show notes.
Right.
So we'd be able to get to it easily, the video. Okay, next is the Children's Health Defense Fund International Press Conference. And this concerns the International Alliance for Justice and Democracy.
Yeah, and we had a wonderful group come in from India and South Africa and America. But you came in and played cleanup batter. You went last.
Yeah.
And it was everybody's favorite. It was fantastic. So I'm hoping you're going to show a short clip from it.
Yeah, I do have a clip, and I can show that. It's not exactly short, but it's hard to.
That's okay.
It's hard to compress a lot of stuff into a short period of time, but this will give you the flavor for what I was talking about there. Okay. Okay, so Bill Gates has put $750 million into WHO in the last 2 years, and he's put $10 billion total into vaccines. query what role the WHO plays in Bill Gates achieving a 2,000% return on his investment. Well, for one thing, the WHO conceals all facts that do not promote the advantages of vaccines. It is basically an advertising agency for vaccines. Take a look at what the WHO says on its website about the Pfizer vaccine. It is quite interesting and revealing what the WHO's website, their own website, says about Pfizer's vaccine, and we'll pay attention to what they're not saying is this as well. Here is their website, and you can see what they say. The Pfizer COVID-19 mRNA vaccine is safe and effective. Now let's look at what they are not telling you. And you can see Pfizer right down here in the bottom. Now I want to look at what they're not telling you. This is from the VAERS website. It's a CDC. It talks about the dangers of vaccine. And you find just by a search on the CDC's own website that there are 28,312 cases where the vaccine was COVID-19, of which Pfizer is obviously a big player, and the patient died. So the vaccine that has killed 28,000 people is deemed safe and effective by the WHO. Now, the other thing that the WHO is not telling you about Pfizer is that Pfizer is a criminal enterprise. It has been caught in criminal fraud before. This is from the DOJ's own website. Pfizer to pay a $2.3 billion fine for fraudulent marketing. Okay, this is, they're pleading guilty to a felony violation for misbranding their drugs and misleading people about their drugs. They're paying the largest criminal fine ever imposed by the United States for any matter. Pfizer is. The WHO doesn't seem, they don't deem it worthy to mention to you that Pfizer is guilty of fraud in misrepresenting. Yeah, so you get the
Here's what's unbelievable. You know, they won't disclose the ingredients because they don't want to have to pay another $2.3 billion fine, right?
Right. Right.
It's literally, I mean, it's like buying your, it's like injecting yourself with secret ingredients from the Russian mafia. I mean, these are serial felons. I told you when I read Empire of Pain, they're talking about the DOJ going after them for fraudulent marketing, you know, decades ago. This is it's their business model.
It's their business model.
It's their business model.
Yeah, they don't care how they make the money. Yeah. You know?
Right.
Yeah. The notion that Pfizer is interested in your health is risible. Anyway.
Okay.
Let's go to another story on pushback. This is interesting. And this concerns Uvalde and talks. It gets to what we were talking about with these events being staged, these shootings being staged. Get a load of the coverage of this. This is this little clip here compares coverage from CNN on the one hand with, I think, NBC or U.S. Good Morning America or something on the other. So let's just take a look. We're talking about a young victim, and she's evidently has two dads. Whoop, sorry about that. Let me try that again.
Sorry for your loss. You're holding a picture of your daughter. She had just won an honor roll. What do you want people to know about her?
That she was just trying to do the right thing. She's just trying to call the cops. This is literally like her worst fear.
She talked about something like this.
So I'm a med aide. So when I arrived on the scene, they still had kids inside. They started bringing the kids out. And I was...
Angel Barza talking about his daughter who has died here, 10 years old.
10-year-old Amory Jo Garza was another fourth grader at Robb Elementary.
She was a real good student. She was a very good daughter.
Amory loved to draw, do science experiments, and make people laugh.
She was the perfect daughter, yeah. She was a perfect daughter.
When he heard about the shooting, Alfred Garza III raced to the school. While waiting for news about his own daughter, Garza says he tried to comfort the children who did manage to get out.
They were just overwhelmed.
It's hard to even wrap your mind around something like that.
This is the last photo he has of his baby girl, posing proudly with her honor roll certificate just hours before the shooting.
I just want to honor her name. I just want her to be remembered as the type of person that she was.
Wow, they really got to work on their crisis actors.
You know, we had I was driving back from Geneva with Robert, and he took one look at me and he said, They're thin on production staff.
Yeah.
But then, you know, one of our News Trends and Stories team that posts these said, I didn't post it because I just assumed they did it on purpose. It's just part of laughing at us. Who knows? You know, I can't explain it, but I will say this. It shows you the extent to which both quality and quantity has deteriorated. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. It just also shows that you put CNN label on anything. You know, a story about the Jolly Green Giant looting pension funds, and people gobble it up like it's on the McDonald's dollar menu. It's pathetic.
Right. No. I don't know why anybody watches it. I really don't.
I don't either.
Right.
I'd look up the pronunciation of Uvalde. That's how much... I don't watch any of that shit. Are you kidding me? Okay, let's go to charts. All right.
Okay.
So let's keep it real. Let's get to charts. What's going on here? Okay, there you
go. Okay, so as I said, this is the U.S. dollar index. And so it went up. It spiked intraday as high as 105. I think it looks 104 there, but it's dropping down. 101 is still very high if you look at all the countries with dollar debt and having trouble in a slowdown earning dollars. They're in a squeeze. And this, you know, at 101, the squeeze is very ugly.
All right.
So, strong dollar.
Here we go.
Okay. So, the U.S. market for, this is a one-year chart. U.S. market is down almost 2%. European VGK is the European ETF from Vanguard, 14.12%. And then China really hurting. So, China has slowed. And again, the unwinding of the China trade sort of hurting everybody. Anyway, so equity markets clearly in the correction territory. And if you just measure the drop since the beginning of the year, we're clearly in a important correction.
Huh. Okay, let's keep it going with AGG TLT.
Now, I've said this before and I'm going to keep hammering in this. For many, many years. So we've been in a long-term bull for bonds, which is now over. And that's a huge change. And for the last 20 years, if you talk to any financial advisor, they would tell you, especially as people approach retirement age, okay, we're going to put you in 60-40, 60% equity, 40% bonds, and the bonds will protect you when the stock market is down. Well, the end of the long-term bull market in bonds means that's not working because, again, one-year chart, the S&P down almost 2% and the long-term treasury or the 20-year ETF for TLT, so that's treasury bonds down, you know, almost 16%.
Yeah,
and
wow.
The bond aggregate ETF down almost 10%. So a 60-40 portfolio, you know, you are absolutely sucking wind. And with the S&P sort of going down as much as it's gone down from the beginning of the year, you are really feeling the pain.
Boy, you're not kidding.
Right. And so there's going to be, you know, it's an entire generation who's going to feel lied to first about the financial crisis and then, you know, the magic of a 60-40 portfolio. So
yeah.
I've said, if you listen to the equity overview, I've said for many years, I'd much prefer a hedged equity and precious metals to bonds because, the hedge protects you from the big downs, but you've got something real, particularly in a world of inflation. And, you know, for many, many years, money has been trying to get out of the bond market and get into real assets or equities. But it'll be interesting to see over the next year or two how as the sovereign bond debt trap gets worse and worse, where all that money's going to go. And that's part of the inflation, and it's a balance sheet inflation, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Excellent.
Gold and silver.
So I just keep loving, you know, I just keep buying more silver. It just looks real attractive. But, you know, as the air comes out of Asia and the economy, it's coming out of gold and silver too. So gold down for the 1 year, almost 3.5%, but silver down tremendously, and the gold silver ratio is very high. So, you know, I never worry about swings in precious metals, but when it swings like this, I always find, you know, it's a good time to buy. You know, we make these Soleri coins, and so I'm always, whenever it gets hammered like this, see the bottom right there? You know, I called Hickory Valley and said, get more coins.
Here?
Yeah.
Right here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you. Okay. Yeah. Let's keep it going. Our favorite. You know, heating oil up 100%, VIX 43%, and lumber minus basically 50%. Same relative positioning as we had 2 weeks ago. Almost identical.
I know. Now, of course, the lumber had run up so much that now that the housing market is softening, it's coming off of that. But
yeah, boy,
if you look at this chart, what it says to me is your energy cost up, your food cost up, and real risk, real assets, what's getting hammered always, with the exception of a few things, is really financial assets. So real assets up, financial assets down. That's the picture. And a world of real risk. The Fed put is no longer working.
Yeah, the only real asset not up, as like you put out, is lumber.
Right.
Everything else, it's
well, you've got the silver and palladium too, but this is a world of real risk. And we have, you know, we have people since the financial crisis who haven't lived with real risk. They've never experienced it. And the 60-40 portfolio is not going to protect them from it.
That's an amazing chart. I mean, you can kind of look at this. Like it's real up here, and most of this down here is financial.
Right.
I mean, there's some physical, but it's, you know, boy, that's a pretty...
Well, the ultimate message was the commodity producer said, we're not going to take paper that you create off your computer anymore. We're not going to trade real assets for funny money anymore. Game over. And that's what that chart says. The financial security.
That's what the ruble says, too.
Right.
You're not getting gas for free.
Right. Right. Well, think about it. Think about how wonderful it is. If you're the euro and dollar, you just print money out of thin air and buy all the, you know, the oil and gas you need. It's a pretty cool trade.
Yeah.
If you can get it. Right.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about a previous wrap up. You want to speak to this real quick?
Yeah. So I want to remind everybody, Take Action 2021. And you, if you go to takeaction2021.solaria.com, we've made the Take Action section public. One of the reasons is subscribers wanted to share it with their friends, and it's got great ideas on, we had Corey Lynn write Loosen Technology's Grip on Your Mind. People are always asking, how do I protect myself but still use technology? That's a great one. And then how to do a Solaria circle, and then how to network globally and start to take action locally. So there's a lot of great ideas and a lot of great materials, very beautifully and well presented. So, you know, it is time, whether you're writing your representatives about the WHO or figuring out how you're going to get local food, and if they come to steal your food, you're going to stop them. You know, you don't, if you don't have a firearm, now's the time to get trained. So there's a lot of great actions in takeaction2021.solaria.com. So if you joined the, if you subscribed after that was published, that's one you definitely want to check out. There's a lot of useful, practical information in there.
Great. And finally, Hero of the Week, who is it?
Del Bigtree. I got to give, this is the third time Del Bigtree has been the Hero of the Week. Del Bigtree, and I can't wait for you to watch this, Del Bigtree, at the end of the first day at the Better Way Conference in Bath, UK, got all the speakers up on the stage, and he had a group of flashcards in his hand, and he said, you know, I'm supposed to ask you the questions from the audience, but I'm not going to do that because we have to have a serious conversation. He said, so they had three men and three women, and then two women come in on Zoom, you know, on the sort of the digital flat screen. And he said, are vaccines a part of the better way going forward? And then the three men all said, yeah, we have to have vaccines. And the three women said, no vaccines. And then the two on the digital screen, one of the women said, yeah, vaccines. And the other said, no, you know, so it was kind of a split audience. And then Bigtree puts it to the three guys who say, you know, we need vaccines. I mean, he just, but he does it in a really positive, open, he's not mean, he's not bullying, he's just drilling the issues down and trying to get clear. He's not saying you're wrong and I'm right, he's saying let's get clear, why do we look at this differently? And I have to tell you, he squeezed him out. And you could see there were three different people really pushing for vaccines and three different sort of presentations. Why is my interpretation? But if you want to know how weak the argument is for vaccines, it's a great... And the thing that was amazing about it, all the little games they played to try and defend vaccines and that I've watched for years, Big Tree and his staff have spent years going through the issues and making documentaries and interviewing people, and they can't be tricked anymore. Yeah. Every time they tried to play the game, he came back. And it was a sight to behold. It was a sight to behold because it was bringing clarity to the issue, and he wasn't letting them duck and play modified hangout. He was really putting it to them.
Let's make a point to put a link in the show notes next week, because I don't have a link to that.
And the reason you don't have a link
myself.
You don't have a link because it's behind a paywall.
Oh,
so as soon as they publish it, I'll make it available. I'm hoping I can put it in the top videos of the quarter, but I didn't send you a link because it's behind a paywall. And Yeah, I don't want to do that.
I thought I'd let them flip through. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, the live stream is like, I don't know, 5 hours long, and you've got to find it. So I kind of need to wait for it to get scripted out and then, you know, to get it up in public.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. So if you don't want to wait and you're happy to pay, just go to the Better Way conference and I'm sure you can buy access. And it's the it's the last panel on the first day. Anyway, Del Bigtree did a great, you know, and that's what we need. Transparency is just getting clear. You know what I mean? It's bringing clarity. And if people disagree, really unpacking why they disagree and how that relates to the science. And you need to do that in a positive way. And that's what he did. And it's hard to do.
It doesn't turn people off. That's the best way. Yeah.
Right. Let's get clear. Let's get clear. That's it.
Okay. Hero of the Week, Del Bigtree.
Yeah.
I think that's it for the week.
Okay. Well, it was quite a week. The central banks, keep your eye on the central banks because they are walking into the vortex of a summer slowdown and an inability to market their excuses for what created inflation. The world knows.
Yeah. I mean, giving them all the money to their buddies and then turning around and blaming wage earners for the inflation, that's chutzpah. But it does take the mask right off and shows you who the Fed is.
Right. But here's the thing. As long as they think the Fed is going to come out the winner, people will play along.
Yeah.
As soon as there's blood in the water.
Yeah. I people don't get that. This crisis that started in 08, it's just going to keep crushing victims. It's rolling its way up. It's going to get you eventually. Even if you think you're clever and you're profiting from this, your time's coming.
Well, here's the thing. Wall Street Parade just came out with an article. I sent it to you. We're not covering this week. A group of credit unions and banks came out with a big letter saying no to CBDCs, that it would destroy the banking community, et cetera. So we're now waking the sleeping giant, and the sleeping giant's pushing back. That's what we saw with Tucker Carlson and domestic terrorism, the Senate with domestic terrorism. You know, if you look at what happened on The Who, when I first started to push back, I thought it was a long shot, but, you know, 80% got done. The Who really, they tried to pull a fast one and it got stopped. And now we see the you know, thousands of credit unions and community banks are now turning against. So the professional, somebody said this week, the professional class is waking up and get
better
ready.
Late than never.
Yeah. Better late than never. Save the date, June 11th, Doctors for COVID Ethics for symposium. It's going to be a really good one. I think it's going to be the best so far. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about it after the end here.
Okay. John, Titus, I can't thank you enough. And I just have to say, as soon as it gets cut out, we'll get your presentation at Geneva up on the in Solari in the news. And I hope you can get it up at Best Evidence because it was great.
I was a little glitchy.
No, sitting in Geneva, everybody was just thrilled. And it we went out on a high. So it was great.
Well, good.
Yeah. Okay. See you next week.
See ya.